This podcast is produced by KPP Financial, Steve Peasley, President. For more than 20 years, helping people look forward to their retirement years with confidence. If you get a chance to rate our podcast on your provider, we'd appreciate you taking the time to do that. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Monday, February 13th edition of Invest Talk. And as always, it's about making you an above average investor. We're here to help you make better money decisions. This show is all about you and what is on your mind. I have a lot of topics I could discuss. It's almost endless when it comes to the market and personal finance and investing, etc. But you know, our live listener line is open for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So you can check in right now or anytime with any money questions at 888-99-CHART. That's our number. You drive the show. So that's why I want you to engage, give that number a call, and let us know what's on your mind, what you're thinking about, what you need help figuring out, and hopefully we can give you some pertinent information and some good perspective. Now, where do you turn for money advice? Obviously here on Invest Talk, but this is a crucial question because a lot of times we get steered in the wrong direction, even sometimes from professionals. You know, paid financial advisors could represent a different problem from the well-meaning advice of friends and family. Now, if the advisor is paid through commissions or maybe through third parties, say they sell insurance, right? Universal insurance. You ever hear that? You ever get pitched universal insurance? I'll tell you this, don't buy it. Universal life insurance is one of the biggest scams out there. And what you have to understand about commission salespeople is that they may not have your best interest at heart, but their own or the firm that they work with, right? They're pushing their products that make them the highest commission. So the question is, when is an advisor really a salesperson? Sometimes it's hard to tell. And that's kind of, if you've heard about the fiduciary rule, that looks like it may get delayed. It's supposed to be come into effect in April. Might be delayed because of the Trump administration is reassessing it, I guess. But they didn't say push it back. So it's still kind of up in the air. But for a registered investment advisor like myself and Steve and KP Financial, we're under the fiduciary duty, meaning we have to put our clients ahead of ourselves. If we don't, it opens us up to a lot of lawsuits, whereas a broker who collects commissions, they can be in it for themselves, but as long as it is suitable for you, meaning, you know, generally is what you need based on probably your risk tolerance, you know, if it's an aggressive investment and you're an aggressive investor, and that's appropriate for you. Even though it may not be the best investment for you. So being a fiduciary, the fiduciary standard means that the person giving advice has to put your best interest at heart. And so if you are looking or want to understand what the DOL fiduciary rule that's going to in effect this year, what that means, that's really what the best explanation is. The advisors are now going to have to put your best interest at heart as opposed to their pocketbook. So when you're looking to buy anything, you have to determine the motivation of any particular person who's selling that advice or that product. And typically, when you're buying a product, that is when you are under the purview of conflicted advice usually. And never get sold anything. You know, what you want to do is you want to figure out what do I need and then seek out a solution to that need. Right? When we sit down with clients, Steve especially sits down, what do you need? What's your goal? Right? So if you have somebody coming to you saying you should buy this because it has these great features, And the features might sound great because universal life features sound great, but underneath the hood, they're not. Right? But the question is, do you need it? You know, I had a friend, client come in last week and paying, I think, close to $1,000 in universal life policy that he has sold. Well, he's single, doesn't have kids. There's no real point in having life insurance, right? And if he wanted that, he could have just bought, and he wanted an investment like that, he could have just bought a variable annuity, because that's basically what he's buying. You're buying a universal life policy as a variable annuity along with a term policy. That's the standard kind of how they meld those two together to create a universal life policy. So understanding what you're buying and what you're looking at is critical. Understanding who you're talking to, where their motivation lies, and is that solving your problem? Right? You go to buy a car, and the salesman might come up to you and say, "This truck is fantastic. It's the best truck on the market. It has these features. It's fantastic." And you might actually agree with all that. But you really need a car, because it gets good gas mileage and, you know, it's comfortable, and whatever your needs are, it fits those needs. The truck doesn't. But guess what? The car company, the auto company, makes more money off the truck than the car. And that happens a lot of times when you are talking with advisors. Now, what if you get financial advice from your parents? Now, according to a survey conducted by UBS, reported in U.S. News Money, more than 40% of millennial-age investors turn to parents for financial advice. But a lot of times, parents don't know a whole lot more than you. And parents are affected by their emotions as well, and they're biased based on how they grew up, right? We've talked about this before, where based on how you come of age in your late teens and 20s and what investments did well then, that tends to shape how you view the best investments for you. Okay, so that can feed into the next generation if they're giving advice to the next generation. You know, if you grew up in the 90s, when stocks were great, you might think stocks are the greatest thing since sliced bread. If you grew up in the early 2000s, real estate is going to dominate your thinking, right? Because it did so well. So understanding those biases is very, very important when you're looking at what advice to take, okay? So the moral of the story is take care in evaluating the source of your financial advice. Now, do you need help with that or anything money related? Let's talk about it. I want to hear from you. I want to know what's on your mind. Could be an individual stock, a sector, the market as a whole, real estate, interest rates, bonds, commodities, personal finance, whether you should save, how to save for college or for your kids or save for retirement, how to safely get income in retirement. There are a lot of ways to do that as well. What exactly is an aggressive investment versus a moderate versus a conservative? Do you understand the difference? You can reach me directly. We're live, 4 to 5 Pacific time at 888-99-CHART.
Hello, my name is Anil from Washington, D.C. I was calling to find out if you could talk a little bit more about options trading. I am new to the stock market and as well as the option trading purview. Just wanted to get your take on what do you guys think about option trading. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Options trading. It's very risky. 80 to 85% of options expire worthless, meaning they don't have any value upon expiration. Okay? So if you're buying options, be very, very careful. You need to understand them. You need to buy yourself time. A lot of people get caught into the idea that they need to maximize their potential profit, and they go out a month or 2 months. Well, anything that you are looking at, whatever trade it is, whatever trade you're taking to use options for, it may not play out in a month, may not play out in 2 months. You need to buy yourself time. So go out farther. The option might cost more because the time value is a lot. So it might look expensive, but I guarantee you, you're going to want that because you're going to need 6, maybe 9 months potentially for that option or that play to play out. And there's plenty of leverage still in longer term options. So don't get caught in buying these short term options. And in reality, the best way to make money in options is to sell premium, sell options. And be very slow to get in the game. It's very risky. It's very enticing because you can make hundreds of percent very quickly if you know what you're doing. But it takes a long time and a lot of lessons learned to really understand what you're doing. And you really need to use technical analysis over fundamental. Because technical analysis tends to play out far quicker than fundamental analysis. So understand that as well. Now, is there a currency war already underway? You can read Steve's market commentary on investtalk.com. I'm financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein. We're here to talk about your money. Talk about your decisions with your money. 888-99-CHART is how to reach right now and begin the conversation. Now, they don't always tell you about the other stuff you need to do. We're going to talk about investing apps and how they can foil financial planning. They're not the end-all be-all, and now they can kind of sometimes be a roadblock to making good financial decisions. So that's one of our main talking points today. And also, is a February market top on track? The markets look strong, but there's some data that's saying, not so fast. Then, 4 reasons to consolidate accounts. We see this all the time. Clients have an old 401k here and an old 401k there, and then they have this IRA and this Roth, and they have the savings account, this joint account, and this individual. It becomes a nightmare. So we're going to talk about why it would make more sense, or usually makes sense, to try to consolidate your accounts into as few as possible, and what positives come out of doing that. And then lastly, is Tesla about to tap the capital markets? Shares are rallying, but are they going to have to raise capital soon? And the odds are they will, so we're going to talk about that as well. But ultimately, I want to hear what's on your mind. I want to know what you are thinking about. These are just topics I pulled out of thin air, really. But I rather discuss topics that you're pulling out of thin air, or at least out of your mind, based on what is concerning you, what are you thinking about, what do you need better perspective or information on, okay? So give me a call. 8899-CHART is our number. Let's take a quick look at the markets today. We have the Dow up 142 points, NASDAQ was up 29, and the S&P up 12. Pretty positive day overall. Kind of had a late day, I don't want to say swoon, but let's say deflating? Good word to use, I don't know. Gold was about flat, oil as well. And, you know, I'm going to get to why I think a market top is very close. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. When you're an Invest Talk insider, you have instant access to useful information assets all at your fingertips anytime you need. Sign up for free anytime on investtalk.com.
Hey, Stephen, Justin, this is Matt from Missouri. Just a question about DTE Energy. I've had the stock for about 18 years. It's continually gone up, and just wondering if it's kind of topped out. Now's the time to get out. Appreciate all your information. Thanks.
All right, he's looking at DTE Energy. This is a utility, provides electric and natural gas utility services to 2.2 million electric and 1.2 million gas customers in Michigan. We've had it for 18 years, so it's certainly appreciated pretty dramatically. Let's look going back monthly. 18 years, so that's going to bring you to about 1999, which back then it was about $30-something a share, $36 a share. Now we're at $80 or $98 a share. So you have pretty substantial capital gains in this. If it's in a taxable account, probably want to think about that potential capital gains hit that you would take if you did sell it. And it yields about 3.4%. I don't see anything wrong with it from a valuation standpoint. It's still relatively cheap, 8.2% operating earnings yield. Its dividends about 3.4%, and their payout looks sustainable. The payout ratio is only 61%. I don't mind it. I don't see any reason that you would want to get out, especially if you have capital, a lot of capital gains potential. It's certainly undervalued by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not expensive either. And long term, you know, return on equity is in the high single digits. Not fantastic from a return on equity standpoint, but it's utility. So you have, you kind of get what you pay for, right? You're going to have low volatility and consistent dividend, not a ton of growth, even though consistently they tend to raise their profits. And that's expected for this year and next year as well. So I see no reason why you really need to get rid of it unless you wanted to, you think you can reallocate that money in a better place. And there's no tax consequences. Hopefully it might be in an IRA or a Roth IRA or 401k, something like that. And you won't have those tax consequences. If it was that case, then maybe I might reduce my position or rebalance the portfolio by buying, using some of that money to buy something else that might do better long term. But this is done okay. You know, you're getting that dividend and you're up about 300% over the last 18 years, which isn't, if compared to a lot of other investments, isn't fantastic. But comparing to the market, since 99, it's actually done pretty well. So I see no reason why you want to dump it. It's not super expensive, not super cheap, but seems like a safe, solid investment long term. That was DTE. DTE Energy is the symbol. Now, investing apps are kind of all the rage today, right? You have Acorn along with Robinhood and Stash, and there's all these different apps that are helping people save and invest. And they do it in ways that kind of pushes you to put money in, right? Like Acorn, they round up on your purchases and the change, the difference goes into your Acorn account and charges you like a buck a month or something like that, right? But the problem is that investing is only one part of what you need to think about. And when you sit down with an advisor, we tend to look at a lot of aspects of your financial picture, right? We view your financial picture like a house. There's that foundation, which is an emergency fund, good insurance coverage, lack of high interest debt, right? That's the start. And then you build on top of that, of what you're based on what your goals are, right? Do you want a large house, small house? You want a big backyard? What do you want? Right? And investing apps, typically, the answer to all those questions are, what should I do with my money is 100% of the time it should go to investing. When in reality, it may be paying down debt. It may be changing your insurance coverage. Do you have an emergency fund? Do you have enough in your emergency fund? There might be other ways to use that extra cash. But for an app, it's always just invest it, right? So Acorns, like I said, rounds up the amount that you spend and invests it into an account of various, I believe, ETFs as they use. Other apps like Robinhood, free stock trading, etc. And, you know, the paradox is that investing apps tend to target young beginner investors because they want to make the process simple. And most young beginning investors don't understand the process, the complexities of the market. And the simpler they can make it, the better, the more participation they're going to get. But they typically only have taxable brokerage accounts, when in reality, a young person should probably be putting that money into a Roth IRA. Okay. In addition, apps typically use questionnaires to identify investors' goals. And we do the same thing for our clients. We send them a brief 3-, 4-, 5-minute questionnaire. And we talk about time horizon, appetite, type at risk. But we talk to them after, and maybe we adjust that number up and down. But in reality, you know, an app doesn't have that perspective. Okay? So don't think these are end-all, be-alls. They're a tool, but they aren't going to solve all your problems. Now we're heading into the part two of our Monday Invest Talk. I want to hear from you. Give me a call at 888-99-CHART.
Our podcast will continue next. Here's good reason number 5 for a portfolio checkup with Steve.
Many portfolios I look at are weighted in just a few or one or two sectors.
A diverse mix of market sectors is so important to the health of a retirement portfolio.
I still see the tech portfolios that they think, well, tech is where the growth is. You have to have a balance in there. You don't ever want to be more than maybe 15 to 20% in any one sector.
Steve can help you reorganize your retirement portfolio. He can make suggestions about the sectors of the future. And if you'd like, a KPP financial program that fits your goals and life situations today. To schedule your one-to-one, one-hour checkup with Steve via Skype or telephone or in person in California, just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab and then Portfolio Review, or call 888-99-CHART and follow the prompts. Looking ahead to our next Invest Talk, predictions about mutual funds you may not like. That's one of our topics next time on Invest Talk, where Steve and Justin answer your money questions no matter when you ask them.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Bruce from New York. I made a mistake and failed to heed your warnings and did not sell my closed-end bond funds when I should have. I should have sold them in the May to September 2016 period, so the fund turned from a decent gain to a loss. For some strange reason, I thought the discount on a closed-end fund would protect me from dramatic downside moves. I was wrong. I decided not to overreact and give the fund a chance to recover. It did a little bit. The bond fund is MYN, Money Yield Nancy. What is your near-term forecast for interest rates, and should I wait a little bit longer, or should I sell immediately? Thanks very much for your advice. Bye.
I was looking at MYN, which is the BlackRock Muni Yield New York Quality Fund. And this is a closed-end bond fund, like he said. And it holds New York State municipal bonds. And it's a closed-end fund. So he talked about the premium and the discount. And he's looking at it and he's saying, okay, it trades at a discount, so, you know, if the market goes down for these type of bonds, the value of the bonds inside the fund go down, well, it's going to shield me from loss because, you know, I can't trade at too much of a discount, right? Or maybe the discount disappears when the value of the bonds go down, and maybe the bond fund will hold its value and they kind of converge together. Well, in reality is the opposite, is that the value of the bonds go down, but also the bond fund can as well, and the closed-end fund did as well. And the only reason that discount is going to close, meaning go to par or maybe sell at a premium, is if the demand in that particular sector of the market becomes exciting for whatever reason, right? Everyone wants to get into New York municipal bonds or municipal bonds in general. So that's the only time that's really going to happen. And when interest rates are on the rise, which they are now, you know, it's going to continue to just trade at a discount. So don't think that discount is going away, I think, anytime soon, unless there's major new implementation of QE or something like that. So what he's talking about is the decline of the bond from about $14.50 or so down to about $12.50. Now it's bounced to about $13, which is a big move for a bond fund, right? Especially a bond fund that's only yielding about 5% or so. And they also use leverage, about 40% leverage, meaning when the price of the bonds go down, it's hurt even worse than normal. Now, they're using that leverage to boost the yield, and that's probably what he's after, is that nice, juicy 5% yield, tax-free, etc. But as always, there's pros and there's cons to every investment that you're looking at. And the cons are, and he's seen it, is when interest rates rise, this is going to get hurt worse than normal because of that leverage, right? So in near term, I do think that interest rates are going to go down a little bit. I think we are due for a retrace. We've seen some consolidation on the 10-year up here around the 2.4, 2.5% level. Today we closed, up about 2.5 basis points. 2.434 is the close today. And I do think we could retrace maybe down to the low twos, to two, to maybe 2% on the 10-year. But I don't think we're going to get much lower than that. The market would have to pull back substantially, meaning the equity market would, for money to fly into bonds at that type of rate to get pushed below 2%. So I think in the near term, MYN will probably rally a little bit, and this applies to most other bond funds. But to me, this is an opportunity to get out, to reduce your size, reduce your position. So I think MYN could rally maybe into the 1350 range, something like that. But I don't think you should expect much more than about 1315. If it gets there, I would unload a lot or maybe all of your position in MYN. Okay? That was MYN, the BlackRock Muni Yield New York Quality Fund. Now, we see this all the time. We see clients come in and they have statements from a bunch of different accounts. Many times they don't even know which account it is. They just say, I have an account. I don't know if it's an IRA or an old 401k or just an individual account. Maybe it's a 403b or a trust. It's all over the board. And they have multiple accounts. And they just don't have a good sense of where they're invested, how they're invested. They just know there's this much in this account, this much in that account, and that's it. And this is not efficient. It's not efficient for multiple reasons, and let's talk about why. Well, first is, it's hard to take charge of your investments. You know, if you have investments in several locations, it's difficult to stay on top of your overall portfolio, the overall amount of risk you're taking, your mix of assets. You might have duplicate exposure of a certain type of asset that you don't realize because they're all spread out between all these different accounts. So we always recommend trying to consolidate them in as few accounts as possible. There's really never a reason to have multiple 401ks, multiple IRAs. You can have a Roth and a regular, but to have all these different IRAs out there just doesn't make a lot of sense. You know, a joint account, a trust account, try to consolidate them all into one, right? If you have a joint account and you have a trust that's in your joint account with you and your wife or you and your spouse, and you have a trust account with you and your spouse, why would you have both? Why not just have the joint in the trust, right? So that's one way you can consolidate as well. You can take an old 401k and roll that into an IRA. Combining multiple IRAs into one, right? You should always try to do that. And if you can get them all at the same brokerage firm, that helps as well, because when you log in, you see them all together. You can rebalance the portfolio in a more simple, integrated manner. And it gives you a clearer picture of your performance, your investment mix, all in one place. So that's first off, is just understanding everything. You know, some people have so many different positions, they don't really get how much equity exposure do I have? How much bond exposure, commodity exposure? Am I high risk? Am I low risk? Am I moderate risk? Where's my risk levels? Am I overexposed to one sector? Overexposed to one stock? When you have all these different accounts, it becomes confusing. Okay? Then number two, keeping track of tax opportunities. When you can bring them all together, tax loss selling becomes a lot easier because you understand cost basis, because maybe you have two different stocks in, or the same stock in two different accounts. Or you have gains in this account over here and losses in, you know, you have gains in a trust account and losses in a joint account. And how do I do proper tax loss harvesting so I minimize my tax payment, right? So number three, reducing fees and commissions. We see this all the time where, you know, you have multiple accounts. You own Apple in this account and Apple in that account and Apple in this account. Well, you all combine into one account, then you have to pay one flat commission of maybe $7, $8 a trade, and you can own it all in one account. Sell it all in one account, as opposed to sell a little here, buy a little here, right? And then there's typical break thresholds as well. For us at KPP, we have a tiered fee structure. The more money you have with us, the lower the quarterly management fee is. So if you can combine them into one place, you can take advantage of those type of price breaks and opportunities to reduce or eliminate certain fees, lowering your investment expense. I mean, there's certain brokers, you have enough money with them, they'll waive all your trading fees, right? And then lastly is just to plan more effectively. Have a better sense of your retirement withdrawal rate, right? How to rejigger your portfolios so that your plan going into retirement is more coherent and it's all brought together under one purview of how do I get to my goal? And when accounts are scattered everywhere, that becomes a lot more difficult. Now, you definitely need to consider whether consolidating accounts means liquidating certain investments and possible tax consequences of that, but it tends to be a lot simpler, and this is what we help clients with. We've seen clients where they had 12 different accounts and we consolidated them down to three. That's happened before. And you know, they come in and they have all these statements and they're just so discombobulated and confused, and you know, they tell us that we're a lifesaver because they just didn't know how to handle it all. So make sure that you understand the pros of consolidating accounts and try to do that if you can. Now, a survey showed that 73% of investors say keeping my money safe is more important than trying to generate returns. And this is just simple psychology. We feel losses more than we appreciate gains. It's true. And that's why Steve and myself and everyone at KPP, we take risk management seriously. That's why during our portfolio reviews, Steve examines retirement accounts with risk in mind, managing it to protect the future of a client. It's our main goal. And Steve schedules just a few of these in individual checkups each month. If you'd like to reserve your own hour via Skype or telephone, just go to investtalk.com, click on the Invest Talk tab, and then portfolio review.
Did you know KPP Financial offers a complete range of real estate services? For many investors, a decision about real estate will factor big in their financial lives in coming years. Whether it's a question of selling your home and downsizing, or maybe you're looking at income property as an investment, KPP Financial can help you make the best possible decision. If you'd like to talk more about it, just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Justin.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Amy from York. I wanted to ask your opinion about RH, formerly Restoration Hardware. It seems awfully beaten up, and two insiders made buys at this level last summer. Is this a stock, a buy? Thanks.
She's looking at RH, formerly Restoration Hardware. We own this, or some of our managed accounts. So it's trading at about book value, modest amount of debt. Management owns 16%. It is cheap from our perspective, 8.75% earnings yield. And, you know, they're going through a lot of management reshuffling and changing their strategy a little bit. But we think that they're still a strong retailer. They're kind of high end, which we think is where you need to be. And they don't really sell their wares in other, you know, on Amazon and other areas. So I think that kind of insulates them from the competition in retail to a certain degree, which we like, and we think it's cheap. So we like it. RH. What else? Management did buy some more, like you said, these levels last year, and we still think it remains cheap. Now, certainly not without risk. This is a retailer, so could things get worse for them? It could. But going from $100 a share down to $25 a share now, we think it's now gotten cheap enough to where we like the stock. That was RH Restoration Hardware. 8899 chart is our number, 8899-242-78. I want to hear from you. We have about, 10 minutes left in the show. So if you're going to call in, just please do it ASAP. It's something that, you know, this is an hour for you, like I said at the top of the show. We want to hear what is on your mind. That's most important to us. I can sit here and talk about Tesla or, you know, are we at a market top? I think that's great. And you probably won't, a lot of you want to hear what I have to say. But ultimately, this is really about what is on your mind. Now, Tesla's shares have been rallying recently. But the big question is, when are they going to raise capital? We know that they need to raise capital. It's not a surprise, right? They burn capital, they burn cash, they're investing greatly. And will it pay off? It's hard to know. I think actually their best opportunity to make money isn't actually in cars. It's actually maybe making batteries. Is the Gigafactory going to be efficient enough or have the capacity to maybe sell to Ford, GM, other car companies that are making electric cars? Well, it looks like they're going to really need to raise capital by the third quarter. And this is just to launch the Model 3. Because they don't have the revenue coming in, the positive free cash flow to sustain their investments in their business really through the third quarter. So they're going to be probably issuing shares, maybe raising some more debt, but you know the cost of their debt starting to get a little expensive. So are they going to raise capital soon? Probably not. But sometime this year they will. So I think that'll be interesting to see how the market reacts to it. You know, we're near the previous highs for Tesla. And the question is it a good value here? And I'm going to argue it's still not. I mean, it's not. Sure, the stock has rallied. I'd say it's become less attractive. You might look at the numbers and say revenues are up 145% and profits are up 153%. Well, that was all kind of manufactured. Good way to put it. So what their earnings are, I think their earnings are this week, to be honest with you. So when their earnings come out, that'll be a big tell. Can they sustain their capital trajectory? Give me a call, 888-99-CHART. Let's go to John in Saratoga. How you doing, John?
Hey, great. Thanks thanks for your show and all your great insight. Great point you brought up earlier about consolidating accounts, but I have a question regarding that.
Sure.
Let's say you move all of your assets into a single brokerage account. Mm-hmm. Now, with a bank, say you have $250,000 in there, it's covered under FDIC insurance. Is there any coverage for a brokerage account?
Yeah.
Is there a cutoff? Is there a maximum you should have in there? Or is it safe to just plow, say you have $5 million, is it okay to plow that into one Vanguard account or with you guys and be safe? with that said?
Well, there is what is called SIPC insurance, S-I-P-C, which is very similar to FDIC insurance, right? And that's up to $500,000. And typically, most brokerage firms, like we use NFS, which is owned by Fidelity, or we use TD Ameritrade, they have additional insurance on top of that by Lloyd's of London. And usually that goes up to, I think at TD it was something like $180 million or something like that. So every brokerage firm may be a little bit different on their insurance level above that $500,000 level. Something you should consider or something you should check on, but typically it's well over $5 million.
Got it. Great. Thank you very much.
No problem, John. Thanks for calling. That was it's a great question. I think because we have clients who kind of use their brokerage account as their savings account, right? Instead of having money just kind of sitting at their bank, they take out $1,200 a month from their brokerage account and allow that money to be working and earning interest and gains on a monthly basis, as opposed to putting it into a bank. And that is important, is understanding the safety and soundness of your capital. And that's another reason why we always say you need to, if you're going to trust your money to an advisor, never allow them to control the money. Never allow them to hold on to the money, right? That's what Bernie Madoff did. The investors were writing checks to companies he controlled, so he could do whatever he wanted with them. And that's why you always use third-party custodians with an advisor. They should always be using a large, safe third-party custodian that's holding the money, and then they have ability to trade that account. And that's what we do with our clients. We're allowed to trade the account, but the money is still in your name. The account is still in your name, not in the name of the advisor or the company that maybe the advisor owns or controls. It needs to be a third party. And then once it is, then you look at the safety and soundness, and one is it SIPC insured? Is there any additional insurance on top of that? All great questions, all something everybody should be thinking about and considering as well. Now, are we near a February market top? Well, there's some indicators that are showing that we're very close. And there are certain things that investors do when they get very, very complacent. And complacency usually marks a market top. One is they become overly bullish. The average investor becomes very bullish in various surveys. That certainly happened. They tend to buy tiny premiums on options, meaning, you know, they're buying out of the money calls with very little, in very near term, for very low amount of money, because they think the market's just hot and they want to ramp up that leverage and get those big returns. That typically isn't something an institutional investor is doing. That's what the average investor is doing. And then this drives down the VIX, the volatility index. They're not buying a lot of puts on the stuff that they own. They're not buying insurance on their portfolio. That's what puts are. So the VIX tends to get very depressed. They put all their cash to work, so there's very little left in money market funds. And then finally, volumes on ETFs like the QQQs tend to drop. You know, so when you have small lots, they're buying 12 shares of the QQQ or 38 shares because that's all they can afford. You know, us as institutional investors, we're buying thousands of shares at a time, hundreds of shares at a time. Those are large lots. And you can tell the difference in who the buyers are. And typically when it's non-round lots, uneven lots, it tends to be the average investor. And that means they're getting involved. And usually that's an emotional decision, and means we're probably near a top. Now our time is up for this hour. Are you one of our InvestTalk insiders? It's a free service making information and education available 24 hours a day, including our webinars. You can play whenever, so sign up for free on InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. I'm financial advisor Justin Klein, Executive Vice President of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And on behalf of Steve Peasley and everyone at KPP, thank you for being with us today. Let's get together again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor.